5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Imagine early next year waking up to a bill for $12,000. It's like something of a nightmare. You've had two gin and tonics the night before and you think, what type of online shopping have I done? But no, this is what could potentially happen should one Clive Frederick Palmer get his way if his arbitration against the state of Western Australia for damages goes his way. Now, this has nothing to do with the border stoush. The legal action that he's progressing now has actually been bubbling away in the background for years. Way back since 2012, when the then Development Minister, Colin Barnett, imposed a heap of conditions on one of his mining projects in the Pilbara. But in typical 2020 style, these hearings are coming to the pointy end at the end of this year, and if he wins, and he's had a few so far in the court system, WA will have to pay him $30 billion. It's basically the equivalent of our annual debt. That, according to Attorney General John Quigley, amounts to every West Australian man, woman, child, and baby coughing up $12,000 each to the Queensland billionaire, the guy who also wants to tear down our last bastion in the COVID defence, a hard border. Today, the government will debate what they are calling emergency legislation in an attempt to head off this massive damages claim that has the ability to kick us, severely kick us, in the hip pocket. This morning, Mr. Palmer has warned resources companies around the world will stop investing in WA if the Parliament today passes this bill. But is that the case? I'm going to be speaking to those in the mining industry around the traps who have been watching all of this play out.
The West Live. The West Live. With Jenna Clark.
$30 billion. It is a staggering amount of money. But I really want to try and break down exactly how all of this came about and now. And importantly, how the state government hopes to stop it. Now, to talk us through this, I'm joined by a commercial litigator and a woman who is a lot more intelligent than I am, Caroline DeRusso. Caro, can we start at the start? And what sparked this damages claim by Clive Palmer?
Morning, Jenna. How are you going?
Good, good. Well, look, we've been up all night trying to decipher this bill. What does Mr. Palmer want from us?
Well, all mining projects in WA, they start with a state agreement. Mm-hmm. So an agreement is put in place as to, you know, what everyone has to do to be able to get a mining project approved. Sure. and headed off. So that there is completely usual. This one was from 2002.
Right.
And so under those state agreements, the proponent or the company who's making the application has to put a proposal to the government. Mm-hmm. And the government can approve the proposal, but sometimes they defer it or they reject parts of it or they ask for more information and whatever. So it's rarely a straightforward process. Mm-hmm. And in 2012, the Barnett government knocked back, I think at first it rejected all the proposal. Mm-hmm. And then it approved it, but it was very heavily conditioned.
Yeah, there was about 46 conditions.
That's right.
Yeah.
So that there's what sparked off the first arbitration. So under this state agreement, if the company thinks that the government has acted unreasonably, mm-hmm. the matter can be referred to arbitration.
Right.
That's normal. That's mm-hmm. pretty garden variety. What went on to happen is that the government came off second best in the arbitration.
Oops.
And like you said, this has been going along and bubbling along in the background for a very long time, and I'm sure there's been a lot of settlement negotiations and all sorts of things. Mm-hmm. But they haven't been able to reach an agreement on this. So I think there's a trial set down for November this year.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Clive is still he's still kicking about it. So it's been a long time in the making, but what has actually occurred thus far is pretty standard, save that it's for an eye-watering amount of money.
Yeah, for sure. So I guess the unprecedented legislative background to all of this is the fact that now we are rushing through this emergency bill, which was presented late in the evening last night and will be debated today. I guess for some background, there's only like a 30 or so days left of Parliament left before they have to, they basically dissolve and head into election mode. So I guess what should West Australians be looking out for in this debate today?
Oh, look, it's actually a really interesting debate. And look, coming off the back, and I know this isn't related necessarily to the High Court challenge, but, you know, we are quite we're quite hypersensitive at the moment about Mr. Palmer. But just in general, you know, money is tight, and $30 billion is a huge amount of money just to think that we could potentially have to hand that over. Mm. Clive Palmer's come out today and said it's not $30 billion. So I would like someone to please tell us actually how much it is. But in a sense, that there's almost secondary because when you look at the legislation, you know, there have been disputes between private companies and the state since day dot. Mm. So this is not really unusual, save for the amount of money. So the draft bill that has been rushed through yesterday, essentially what it does is anything in relation to this dispute with Mr. Palmer, the government has no liability for. The government, the arbitral awards that have previously been made in Mr. Palmer's favour are of no effect. There can be no appeal or no review of the state's conduct in relation to the dispute. The rules of natural justice don't apply, and for anyone who's even brushed up against the legal, you know, the court system or whatever, you know, there are rules and processes in place to make sure things are done as fairly as possible. Any proceedings that he brings will be terminated. And it also says that the Freedom of Information Act doesn't apply in relation to the dispute. So, and one last thing, Mr. Palmer indemnifies the state in relation to the dispute. So it's incredibly far-reaching.
Yeah, yeah. So when you say indemnifies the state, for people that, like myself, we've only ever watched Ally McBeal, what does that specifically mean?
So everything in here is drafted really broadly. So in a sense, it's a little bit difficult to pinpoint exactly how it will apply because, as you know, facts apply to laws apply to facts and circumstances differently. But essentially here, you know, if he's caused any loss or damage or cost or whatever, his companies essentially have to indemnify the state in the sense that the state won't have to pay for it. He will be liable for whatever loss and damage is suffered.
Wow, it's pretty severe stuff. And I guess that you say this has been happening, this type of back and forth and argy-bargy with corporate Australia has been going on for quite some time. Do you think that he has a leg to stand on when he says that it could scare off? I mean, you have worked in the mining sector for as a litigator previously. Would it scare people potentially investing in WA off, do you think?
Look, it does have that potential. We obviously don't know until that plays out. But, I mean, ultimately, we need to remember that this is a commercial dispute under a state agreement. It went to arbitration in accordance with the agreement. The government came off second best, and now they're throwing their toys out of the cot. So, you know, I guess with doing business in Australia, you know, once state agreements are done, and look, others have been amended before and whatnot, so governments aren't perfect, but, you know, there's not the sort of behaviour that people expect out of Australian governments or governments in the West in general. You know, they expect to be able to, okay, we're going to make this massive investment. We want to know the rules to the game. We don't want to see the game change later on. And, okay, Clive Palmer is pretty unpleasant and he is pretty litigious, but that's on brand. He's been that way since the 80s. This should not be coming as a great surprise to anyone.
Yeah, yeah. Interestingly, last night, Mr. Quigley really banged the drum around, you know, this legislation does not give rise to things like sovereign risk. To people that may not understand that term, what does that mean, Caro?
Well, when companies are doing their, you know, due diligence essentially and trying to work out whether they're going to invest in a certain place, you know, they go through a whole risk management process and they think, okay, we're going to stump up this sort of money to be able to do this project. We want to be able to make this much money out of it. But we need to understand what the risk profile is in dealing in that jurisdiction.
Yeah.
So, you know, the risk profile of dealing in Australia as opposed to, you know, mining in Africa is totally different, right? Because of all the political upheaval and corruption and those sorts of things. So sovereign risk is really just a slice of the decision-making process as to whether a company thinks it's worth risking their money in a jurisdiction.
Wow. I guess it's really fascinating for people that aren't involved in all of the things that happen behind the scenes to get big mining projects off the ground in WA. What do you think the chances? I know I'm not asking you to look into a crystal ball come November, but I guess, you know, the state has lost in a number of arbitration hearings so far. What do you think our chances are if this legislation does not pass?
Well, the thing is, we know this, say for example, if this legislation doesn't pass, we know it's going to trial. We don't know, I don't know enough about what the nature of that claim is.
Yeah.
And when things go to trial, you tend to break them up between liability and quantum, right? Mm-hmm. So you need to determine whether you're liable first before you determine the amount of money. So just because someone's claiming $30 million, allegedly, doesn't mean they're going to get $30
million. Yeah.
And in fact, rarely do people get everything that they're actually looking for. So there's that aspect there. The other thing is, look, I know the state government, you know, it costs a lot of money to get these sort of matters to trial.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that they do want to pass this legislation, but I don't understand why it needs to be passed today.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, I think that there should be more consultation, you know, within the Houses of Parliament themselves. The public should get to know more before everyone just goes, oh, we're just going to put this through, we're protecting you, don't worry about it, it's all fine.
Yeah. And interestingly, now this probably is very bubble, but I have to ask a question. Mm. There is some pieces in that legislation around information like freedom of information, and I guess that's when that people can basically apply to have information released from the government. In certain appendixes of this legislation, that does not apply and will not be allowed. Is that concerning?
Oh, look, I think any time that the government, and look, it's a bit difficult because there are certain circumstances where we understand that, you know, you can't apply for information. So things that are very security related, you know, it can be difficult to get information under Freedom of Information Act and that sort of thing. But as a general rule, the government should be looking to be transparent and to the extent, I mean, you have commercial confidentiality as well, but to the extent that I'm sure there's plenty of other documentation around this dispute that isn't necessarily strictly commercially confident, the government should be trying to be as transparent as possible, particularly given, you know, that this legislation is really quite the sledgehammer.
Yeah, for sure. Now, I guess we will only be sitting passively up in the press gallery this afternoon when the bill is debated. What would you be hoping from, I guess, as a West Australian citizen and also a litigator, what would you be hoping that the opposition really presses the government on?
Well, I think we really need to understand a bit more about the background of the bill, like why they think that something like this is so necessary. Mm. Because, I mean, I did have a read through Hansard yesterday and I understand the points, but in my mind, it's a commercial dispute.
Yeah.
And I'm sure the State Solicitor's Office has gone through this and they obviously know this back to front and inside out.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, why couldn't you do something, say, for example, have a cap on damages?
Yeah.
Why couldn't you legislate a cap on damages? Why do you have to burn the whole house down, you know? And that there, I suppose, is the bit for me. I really hope that the opposition ask questions around, okay, we understand this is important, but why is it necessary to be done today?
Yeah.
You know, why are there, for example, those provisions, you know, saying the Freedom of Information Act doesn't apply?
Mm.
Why, you know, those are the sort of things that they should be asking questions about. And I guess, you know, at the moment and for this government, you know, I understand this is a commercial issue, but, you know, there's a lot of political stuff going on in the background in relation to Clive Palmer.
Yeah.
And, you know, it, I mean, in a sense, for the Labor government, it's a great political move. Mm. But whether ultimately it's a great legal move, you know, I think there's a bit more to play out there.
I cannot wait to see what you think of it. And we can follow you at Caro DeRusso on Twitter, commercial litigator, contributor to Sky News, and also a great columnist for The Spectator magazine. Caroline DeRusso, thank you so very much for joining us on The West Live.
Anytime, Jenna. Thanks.
You're listening to The West Live.
So much going on in the world of resources at the moment. And one man that has been busier than most during COVID and even prior to that is the CEO of the Chamber of Minerals and Energy, Paul Everingham. He joins us this morning. Paul, like a lot of us, you were probably up late trying to read through this bill that is being rushed through Parliament regarding Clive Palmer, who plans to sue Western Australia for $30 billion. What is the mining industry's take on this news this morning?
Oh, look, I think, you know, after reading the detail last night and this morning, Jenna, the action Mr. Palmer took seemed quite unusual from my reading of things. And I think it sort of resulted in the state having to take fast and appropriate action as quickly as it could to protect taxpayers in Western Australia. So, look, I don't have a problem with anything that the state's done.
Do you think that Mr. Palmer has a leg to stand on when he says that this type of action could deter potential investment in Western Australia moving forward?
No, I don't. West Australia's the premier resource province in the world. Anyone suggesting otherwise doesn't understand the global resource sector. And as recently as earlier this year, we were ranked the number two investment destination for doing business in the world. I can only just go on the facts, and they are that West Australia is a fantastic place to do business and a fantastic place to invest, and the diversity and geography of the companies that are here, a testament to that.
Mm. Now, we saw a news earlier in the week that the West Australian hard border could be a bit of a concern for getting some workers into Western Australia. About 8,000 jobs will be required in the next couple of months. What do you say to that? How do we get those people? How do we train up West Australians to get them into work quicker?
Well, the first thing I'd say is probably going into 2021 going to be industries that are still suffering from the impact of the health pandemic, the COVID disease. And so wherever possible, our industry is going to try, with our best intent, to train locals and skill up locals, especially where, you know, some industries and businesses are still in distress, and try and, you know, transfer and translate some skills into new skills so people can work in our sector. And we hope that that will fill a large part of the gap. Mm. It may not, and then we'll have to look at other solutions and whether or not, you know, we do have to look interstate. But our priority will be employing, training and employing West Australians first.
This is what I love, and the fact that we are focusing on training up both old and young West Australians and maybe getting them to retrain to get into the resources industry. But I think one certain conversation that always flows around WA is that everyone knows someone that works in the resources industry. But what about some of us, Paul, that may not have any connection and we do want to get a foot in the door? How easy is it, and what steps do we need to take if we do want to get a job in mining and resourcing moving forward?
I think, like, if you're in school, the first thing you should do is talk to your careers counsellor. If you're at TAFE, the same. Talk to the careers counsellor or job guidance counsellor. If you're at university, do the same. If you're already in the workforce or you're or unemployed, we advertise almost every resource job on behalf of our members quite widely, promoted on social media. There are unskilled jobs in the mining industry, but there's also a lot of skilled jobs. So I would recommend people that do want to go into the mining industry, be open-minded about learning new skills. Mm-hmm. Often it doesn't have to be years of skilling or training. You can do it in 6 to 12 months or 12 months to 2 years. But I would encourage people to be open-minded about training to get new skills, because even, you know, just to drive a truck on a mine site, you do need specific skills. And if you want to operate a mine site from a remote operation centre, you'll need to, you'll need to learn analytics and data management and some IT skills. So, so be open to learning, and I think there'll be plenty of opportunities. And even if you don't know someone in the mining sector, every job is advertised. We promote them. There's going to be a raft of jobs needed to be filled, not just next year and the year after, but going forward. And, you know, we really encourage people to look at our sector for a career.
For sure. Now, you are the eyes and ears of all of the mining companies and energy companies around the state. What would be your message to Clive Palmer, given all the news we've had over the past couple of weeks with him trying to bring down the hard border, and now the news overnight with the bill that he would like us to fund?
Oh, look, I just think... I don't know Mr. Palmer. I don't wish him any ill will, and I don't have a message for him or his companies, but I would sort of caution damaging the reputation of Western Australia and Australia. Western Australia and Australia have little or no sovereign risk, haven't had for over 100 years. Australia and Western Australia are premier investment destinations for every country in the world. We have migrants from all over the world wanting to come and live here. It's a preferred place to live and raise families and see your kids grow up and have a career. And so I think everyone should be talking Western Australia and Australia up at this time, given the difficult economic and health circumstances. And to not be doing that, I think, means you're not really part of the wider team, WA and Team Australia, and I'd encourage everyone, including Mr. Palmer, to get on board with Team Australia and Team WA.
That is a great message. Chief Executive of the Chamber of Minerals and Energy here in WA, Paul Everingham, thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure. Thanks.
The West Live. Making news.
Matt Tinney from Sunrise, did you get in the car this morning at 2:30 and empty out your ashtray to get your $12,000 for Mr. Palmer?
I'm still scratching. Yeah. I've probably got about $2. I've got $2.20, so that's going to leave.
I've got 55 cents and a half-eaten PK piece of gum, so that's all he's getting from me. Now, oh, I guess this has been making news ever since Attorney General John Quigley strolled into the chamber last night at 5 o'clock to announce this bombshell of legislation. Walk us through what the latest is with Mr. Palmer v. the State of Western Australia.
So Mr. Palmer's put forward this legal claim for $30 billion. He's taking this legal action over decisions he claims hurt his attempt to stand the proposed mine in the Pilbara to his interest. So he has gone in, had this claim. This has been bubbling away since 2013 from a legal perspective. Mm. Obviously, it's a lot more interesting now because of the argy-bargy over the hard border. But the government's gone in with emergency legislation to try to pull the rug from underneath Clive Palmer and prevent any current or future damages claims. So interesting action. It'll be very interesting to see how this unfolds. We're expecting Mr. Palmer to hold a media conference this morning, Perth time. He's over in Queensland, obviously not in WA, getting over here. So it'll be interesting to see what he has to say in this ongoing battle.
Indeed, and I'm hearing that the Premier and Attorney General John Quigley may also be up. I think everyone's just, it's a bit of a high noon standoff just to see what time people will schedule their press conferences, because I'm assuming Palmer will want to go first and Prem would like his final say. Now, corona cases, what's the latest out of Victoria?
So, Victoria, terrible news, 21 deaths, and the number of new cases has actually increased, over 400 again now. Some new stats out today saying for those who are in aged care, if they test positive,
The result is that one in four of them die from COVID-19.
God.
So really awful situation. I mean, they're looking for any positives whatsoever, but, you know, here we are seeing cases rise and the number of deaths rise.
Yeah, absolutely. But in some good news, as we saw some great news in your Perth update on Sunrise this morning, there's a new playground coming to town.
Yes, how exciting is this? I know you'll be, you know, lining up to go there, Jenna.
Oh, love a playground.
Yeah, $5 million playground.
Yes.
It promises to be the biggest in Perth, so 3,000 square metres.
Wow.
It'll feature a skate park, a pump track, which I did have to Google this morning. That's for people with skateboards and scooters and bikes. A water park, a flying fox, basketball courts, barbecues, trampoline, climbing tower, and even an obstacle course for people who are into parkour. You know, that thing where you just jump from stuff.
Yeah.
And it yourself.
It's very cool.
So this is all part of a $17.5 million makeover of Wellington Square in East Perth. I reckon that this will be very, very popular with the kids.
Absolutely.
And they're calling it an intergenerational playground. Not sure if it still applies to our generation, but definitely a couple of the younger generations covered off the pump track and the trampoline.
For sure, for sure. I think that's the only reason why I really put my hand up to babysit my darling niece and we head and have a swing, because I think it's allowed when you have a little one with you, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's the whole fun of it. Like, they can push you and you can sit on the swing. That's how I roll.
Well, sure, she can't walk yet, but we'll get there eventually.
Yeah. For a couple of years.
Yeah. Well, Maddie, thank you so very much for keeping us up to date. We'll see you on Sunrise tomorrow, and we'll join us in all the West Live after that.
Great. Have a great day, Jenna. Thank you.
Fabulous. Now, coming up, I think we're going to have to go straight into the Wild West, because we've got a couple of people that are a little bit busy this morning given all of the news that's flying around. So stick with us. We'll head to the Wild West shortly.
The Wild West.
Oh, it's never been a truer claim. Ben O'Shea, what a night. What a day. You're the mayor of the Wild West. What do you make of all of this?
Oh, look, it's crazy. It's just crazy. But that's 2020 for you, isn't it? You just don't know what this year is going to deliver next.
It is. It is. Now, what's making news in your neck of the woods today, my friend?
Now, do you remember a while back we spoke about a bloke in Kalgoorlie who had who was accused of knocking off a liquor store, his excuse to the magistrate was that he actually was not intending to rob the liquor store. He was actually looking for his nana's dog.
Oh, yes, yes. And he stole the cruises or the gin? I can't remember.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think it might have been some cruises, I think. The court, the magistrate adjourned the case at the time because he wanted to go and review the CCTV footage that the police had provided to see if there actually was any evidence of a dog and whether or not the accused had any relationship to that dog, or if it just happened to be like a passing stray mutt. And so now, so this has happened, and the magistrate is back in court, dragged the bloke back into court, and has found that his excuse, well, look, it didn't really stack up, and so didn't buy the excuse that he was looking for Nana's dog, and instead said, no, come on, mate, you've got to have a good hard look at yourself. And then it turns out that the bloke had subsequently gone to an ice cream shop and was not happy with the price that he was charged, and then has verbally abused the staff members, who said that they were going to call the cops.
Oh, my Lord.
And he'd said, I will call them. I'll assault them when they arrive. I'm not afraid of going to jail. And so the magistrate has said that, look, mate, you need to work on how you talk to people. Your people skills are a bit lacking.
You think?
Yeah, but because he's already currently imprisoned on another matter, he managed to escape with just $1,000 fine.
Oh, for God's sake. Okay, well, just let's maybe all respect everyone out and about today if we get the chance to not be like old mate from Jero. Now, this is really interesting. Super dingoes are being created in WA.
isn't it just most a 2020 story ever?
It really is.
Yeah, the pandemic didn't get us here in WA, but super dingoes are coming. everybody be prepared. It's like a Godzilla situation, yeah. From what I understand. I haven't read all the signs.
Yeah.
So basically, so you're a country girl, so I'm sure you would know about 1080 baiting.
Steer away from that, my friends. Stay away from that.
It's the chemical bait that they, it's a poison that they drop out into the bush to kill feral animals, cats and dogs and whatever, and the native animals stay away from it. Now, you probably know this, but dingoes are not considered a native animal, and so they're not really afforded any protection under the Environmental Act.
Mm.
So you can go shoot them willy-nilly, which always struck me as a bit sad, but they also interbreed with wild dogs, which are a huge problem out in the bush. So, you know, I kind of understand where everybody's coming from on the dingo situation.
Mm.
But with these 1080 baits, what they're now realizing, and it actually makes perfect sense, it's Darwinism in a nutshell.
Yeah.
So the baits are only a certain size that they will kill smaller animals. So they kill cats, they kill small wild dogs, and they kill small dingoes, but they don't kill the big dingoes. The big dingoes are kind of like survive. And so what you found is that these baits have kind of eradicated small dingoes and created a situation where only the fittest, largest dingoes are surviving and breeding. And so they're getting bigger. Like you're talking, like the dingoes are 10% bigger than they were a few years ago.
Yeah.
And so where will it end, Jenna, I ask you?
Where is it going to end, mate?
Well, I think you know, we're talking about a full-on apocalypse here led by a giant dingo invasion, which, you know, it'd be exciting.
Yeah, absolutely, for sure. Now, yeah. So I guess what is going to be happening to all of this? What are they going to do?
Oh, no, it's always a classic science story. They've just pointed out the problem. They haven't really offered any solutions. Like, I guess you could increase the size of the 1080 baits to get the bigger dingoes, and that's probably something they're going to look at. But the worst thing about it is kind of everybody predicted it would happen, but, you know, no one listened to the scientists.
No. Why would you listen to the science? That just seems ridiculous.
Exactly. Which is also, isn't it also the plot of like every Godzilla movie or something?
Definitely.
Like it begins with a scientist saying, we can't do this sort of experiment. It's going to end in disaster. And then no one listens.
No, so, that's so true. So true. Well, Ben O'Shea, Ben O'Shea, as always, it's such a pleasure to have you in the Wild West. We'll have you join us on the West Live tomorrow. You have a great day.
You too. Bye.
But before we head off to get into our hump day, let's head to the engine room of the nation, where the wheels have continued to turn despite this global pandemic. Joining me now is the mayor of Karratha, Peter Long. Pete, what do you think, what do people up there think, and what do your workers living in the Pilbara make of this $30 billion claim by Clive Palmer overnight?
Well, I haven't had time to really speak to anyone, but it was in the news yesterday, of course, and the few people I have spoken to are pretty appalled by it. I personally think it is an extremely bad move by Palmer, and hopefully what the state government is doing will make sure that that the state cannot be sued by somebody who's actually using our own iron ore to make this happen. So let's hope this doesn't get any further.
For sure. Now, a lot of his little mine pits are in your neck of the woods, I guess, with those sort of trekking along. What other projects are kicking on up there? What's coming online? We read earlier this week, and we were joined by Paul Everingham, who's the Chief Executive of the Minerals Council here, saying that we're going to need around 8,000 workers around in the mining and resources sector in the next couple of months. So what's coming online? Where are we going to get a job?
Well, he's right. It's actually about 18,000 extra jobs,
actually,
because we lost about 10,000 since the beginning of COVID in the Pilbara. And the reason that was the case is that the companies were only doing what they really needed to do. So they actually deferred all their maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all that deferred maintenance work which has to happen across the Pilbara.
Uh-huh.
So there's probably those 10,000 which would normally do that will have to come back. And on top of that, we think there's another 8,000 further workers required. There's currently, we've got major projects being constructed right now for Rio Tinto at Koodaideri, a new iron ore mine, and with FMG at Eliwana and with BHP at South Flank. These are all $3 billion projects. They're not small ones.
No.
We've got lots of other things happening. We've got gold. Novo has actually just bought one of its smaller explorers, and they expect to be actually starting gold mines in the Pilbara in the near future. We've got Bella Bella Infrastructure, BBI, which is working on a $5 to $8 billion iron ore project in the West Pilbara. BC Minerals has got a potash and salt project, which they're intending to start just on the western side of Karratha. Perdaman got a $4 billion urea project, which is getting very close to being fired off. And that's apart from the oil and gas projects, which have been put on hold for a year or so, the Scarborough and the Browse projects. But the Scarborough, which is going to get FID, the financial investment decision, is going to be in the first half of next year in 2021. And that's a $15 billion project.
Wow.
And we're also hopeful that Browse will go ahead. So that's bringing the gas from the Browse field in Kimberley. They're going to bring it by subsea pipeline back to the North Rank and then into the Karratha gas plant, which will be running down on its supplies by then, and that's a $30 billion project. So it's just an enormous amount of work, and what's great for us is that we've spent a lot of money on the town in the last decade, in the last 10 years, so Karratha is really a favourite place for people to come and live now, and I think the pandemic has emphasised that, because we haven't sort of felt much about that at all, so people are out running and riding and exercising and going out to the islands and going out to the river pools, doing all the things they normally do, and thinking, well, aren't we lucky to be living here? So we think it's going to be a great time for the Northwest and Karratha in particular in the next decade.
For sure. I'm exhausted by you just listing all of those amazing projects and the fact that you've got so much activity going up there. I just want to pack my swag and get up there ASAP, Pete. Now, in terms for locals, is this good news for everyone around the town? And should people be moving? Like, we had the mayor of Kalgoorlie, John Bowler, on yesterday, and he said, come to Cal, it's a great place to live. Would you encourage people, if you don't want to do that FIFO life, have a bit of a desert change up to Karratha?
Yeah, that's right. And John Bowler's right. Cal is a nice place to live. And people sort of think of all our towns as hot and dusty, and they're not that at all.
You're very tropical.
Yeah, well, it is. We're 20 degrees. We're tropical climate, and you get used to living in shorts, I suppose. Yeah, look, it's a great place to come and live. I came here 35 years ago for 6 months. I was working for Alan Bond, and, you know, I've brought up my children here. My wife loves it, and there's so many other stories like that of people who've come here for a short time and then just think it's such a great place to live. It's safe. It's secure. It's got so many opportunities. People, employment opportunities are fantastic. You get ahead further in companies than you would back in Perth, where there's more competition, wonderful lifestyle. You know, you've got islands and national parks and, you know, fresh air. It's just a great place to live. And so we've actually got an advertising program you may have seen called Karratha is Calling. And it was on at the footy the other day. My daughter was out there saying, I saw Karratha is Calling. And it's all part of our attempt to make Karratha Australia's most livable regional city.
Okay.
And so I'd definitely encourage people from the south to come up here. It really is a good place to live, and there's going to be plenty of work. I looked this morning, there's 867 jobs in the Karratha region right now on seek. So pretty good.
That's fantastic. Well, look, 35 years, so you're almost a local. And you've been mayor for, how long have you been mayor there for?
I've been a councillor since 2011 and mayor for nearly 7 years now.
So during that time, you would have seen, I guess, the boom, the bust, and then now the rebuild, and then COVID. What issues do you think are holding Karratha back, and how you overcome those?
Yes, that's exactly right. We have a boom bust economy, and that has been the problem. The house prices go up when there's a high demand, when there's a lot of work, and then when that construction work is finished, the prices drop off and people can lose money, and that's been really tough. So what we're trying to do is diversify our economy. So we've got a whole lot of new projects starting which are fully sustainable. So one of them, for example, is called EcoMag, which actually takes salt bittens and makes magnesium out of that.
Oh, I love magnesium.
Totally sustainable.
Yeah. Am I allowed to like it, or is that the bad kind?
That's fine. They do make sort of some sorts of creams and things out of it, but it's actually used in a whole lot of things, including Gorilla Glass, which is what you have on your phone, your iPhone. So that's one project. We're now growing oysters in the archipelago, because we've got the islands of the Dampier Archipelago just on our doorstep, so we're growing oysters there. We're looking at solar hydrogen. There's a couple of solar hydrogen projects starting where you use PV panels or wind to create renewable energy, which you then use to split water, and that hydrogen now is is the fuel of the future. Instead of petrol and gas, it's going to be hydrogen.
Amazing.
And we can make hydrogen renewable forever. And when you burn it, you get water. It's just a wonderful opportunity that we've got up here. And we've got so much sun and vacant land up here to do it that I see that as a fantastic opportunity. And we've also got the greatest gas exporting facilities in the Pilbara as well. You know, we've got 90% of them or something that we have in the nation. So it's pretty amazing. We export $100 billion. $100 billion came out of the Pilbara last year.
Yeah.
It was a record year. That's just so much. In fact, WA as a whole, I don't know whether you know, which is essentially regional WA. So taking all the country areas of WA, we export $150 billion, which is 36%. Over a third of Australia's export income comes out of the regions. So it's good for people to get out of the city, go and live in the regions where you have a wonderful lifestyle, fresh air, and you get to know people. You grow up in a much more happy situation. So, and the Pilbara is no exception, and Karratha in particular. There's just so much opportunity. We're sort of living at the edge now of some really terrific things that are going to happen that's going to change our lifestyle and make us a much more sustainable country.
For sure. Well, like so much innovation, so many job opportunities. I just need to know, is the beer cold?
No problem. We've got lots of LNG keeping that cold.
Good. I guess just for one final thing, Pete, because you've worked in the mining industry for the majority of your career, as well as being a counsellor and things like that. Clive Palmer's come out this morning, just breaking news that he's basically saying that this movement by the West Australian government to ward off his claim for damages may put off people investing in WA. What do you say to that?
Of course they won't. Of course they won't. WA is the best place for miners to invest in the world. The best place in the world. We were in our CEO, Chris Adams, and I were in Sweden last year at the OECD Mining in the Regions Conference, which was supposed to happen in Karratha this year, by the way, so we put off next year.
Yeah.
A world conference takes 10 years to get a mine off the ground in Europe. They hate them.
Yeah.
We are so compliant. We are so good for mining, apart from the fact that we've got just about every mineral that you can think of here. So that is just not true. There are so many opportunities. Rio Tinto, for example, exports made a profit of $8 billion Australian last year and the year before. Fantastic profits. So that's just not the case. There will be people all over the place who would take up his leases if need be. So he's just, I'm thinking, exaggerating a little for the sake of the court case maybe there.
Oh, I don't know. Exaggerating, Mr. Palmer. I don't know what you're talking about, Pete. Look, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you, Peter Long, Mayor of Karratha. We look forward to potentially, you know, let's come up and attend this conference that you're going to host up there next year and have a ginger beer underneath one of the frangipani trees. It sounds absolutely lovely.
Do come.
Thanks for your time. I'm sure everyone up there will be watching very closely what happens in Parliament today in relation to those urgent laws that are being rushed through to stop Clive Palmer's staggering claim against the state. That's it from me. We'll be back tomorrow from 8:45 a.m. over on thewest.com.au/live. We also stream on Perth Now. If you are on the internet at around 12:30 this afternoon, we will be recapping the show over on thewest.com.au. Have a lovely Wednesday. Chat to you tomorrow.
You've been listening to The West Live with Jenna Clark. If the story behind the story matters to you, then you can count on thewest.com.au to deliver.
It's the podcast that has Australia captivated. Claremont, The Trial. We take you inside the courtroom with over 3 million downloads already. Catch up on Claremont, The Trial at thewest.com.au or where you get your podcasts.